Welcome to In Plain Sight, Jeremy in Kentucky on Republic Broadcasting Network. Please go to republicbroadcasting.org, smash the donate, send the fundage, mail your check or money order payable to RBN 2251, Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Call in that credit or debit card number to 1-800-724-2719, extension 3. This is your Tuesday night broadcast, the Patrick and Jeremy Show. Joining me from a mobile broadcasting mobile somewhere deep in the heart of who knows where, probably an underground bunker, I don't know, Patrick Slattery. Dr. Patrick Slattery, welcome to the show.
Yeah.
What's going on, my
friend? Try Mobile, Alabama, maybe.
You never know.
Story is studio in Mobile. I guess it's Mobile, not mobile.
Potato, potato.
It could be a bicycle.
Yeah. You never know. I think you did a broadcast like earlier this week on your bicycle in a business suit.
I did. How many RBN hosts would do that? On a bicycle, in a business suit, amidst a plague of frogs. Not many.
I would have to take off my work boots and put my New Balance running sneakers on to ride a bicycle. I certainly wouldn't try it with penny loafers.
Well,
do you wear penny loafers? Is that a boomer thing? Do you still do penny loafers? Is that a thing?
Well, if loafers is, by loafers you mean shoes that don't have laces and you put them on with a shoehorn? Yeah.
Classic. No, the penny loafers, you could like put a penny in the front of them or something. I remember that.
Yeah, I remember the term, but I don't even remember what it means. Loafers. No, when I was growing up, we had everything had to have laces. You had to tie your shoes, but no getting around it. But as an adult, I just keep a shoehorn handy.
Yeah, we did the thing in the 80s where you got those shoes called Eastlands, and most of them had laces, some of them didn't. They were leather shoes, and you wore them without socks. That was the thing.
No.
So, I'm glad I have you. This is Tuesday night, because I guess we have, if you read the prep, and I don't think you did, you're just going to respond on the fly, as you usually do. Some business booming up in Kosovo, where you have Albanian terrorists being supported by NATO. And, I guess Kosovo was part of Yugoslavia, and all that stuff broke up in the 90s with the disbanding of the Soviet Union. So let me skip the part where I read Wikipedia to try to understand this. And throw it over to you so you can tell us the significance of this and why it matters to the RBN audience in relation to the current Russia-Ukraine debacle.
Well, okay. So Yugoslavia was structured in a similar way to the Soviet Union, where it was divided into republics. And then the larger republics had within them autonomous regions. So you had this, like, they had some, like, typically the larger republics, the what you'd call the union republics, the first level republics, were just divided into sub-districts, but some of these sub-districts had a higher degree of autonomy. Now, we're divided into 50 states, and then the states are divided into counties, or if you're in Louisiana, parishes, and there's nothing particularly special. The only special thing we have, I guess, are Indian reservations, right? And so both the Soviet Union and Yugoslavia, when they did their initial breakup, well, the Soviet Union was very clean in a way. They just they recognized the independence of three republics in September, those are Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia. And then the remaining 12 republics just broke up. The three, Ukraine and Russia and Belarus, those leaders just agreed to dissolve the Soviet Union, which they didn't have the right to do, but Gorbachev told the Soviet Parliament, just roll with it. We don't want a civil war. So that's what they did. It just got dissolved, and all of a sudden, these remaining 12 republics became independent countries. Yugoslavia was a bit different, but it was still those republics became the independent entities. So you had Slovenia broke off. There wasn't a whole lot of fighting there. Croatia broke off. The thing is, Croatia, parts of Croatia had large Serbian populations, and so there was a lot of fighting there. They broke off. Then Bosnia, which was a republic, declared independence. But the thing is, Bosnia was really mixed up. You had areas that were almost exclusively Serbian, areas that were almost exclusively Croatian. And these people, like they all speak the same language, but they had different religions. And so you had a massive civil war there. There is a southern republic called Macedonia, which broke off. There really wasn't fighting with that. Although the Greeks didn't like the fact that it was using the term Macedonia, because modern Macedonia is Slavic, but ancient Macedonia was, they were Greek, or at least closely related to the Greeks. And so there was this, there was an issue there I'm not even going to go into, but the northern Greek province is called Macedonia, and they always resented the use of the name Macedonia. That left Serbia, which was large, and Montenegro, which was small, and they maintained a rump union for another several years, for another dozen years or so, into the 20th century. But the issue was Kosovo, which was inside, it was part of Serbia. It was part of the Serbian Republic, but it was an autonomous region within the Serbian Republic at the time that Yugoslavia was falling apart. And so it didn't have that, that regular republic status. And both in the Soviet Union and in Yugoslavia and in Czechoslovakia, for that matter, everything was breaking up along that first order republic lines. So it would be as if United States, it was dividing itself up, breaking up just along states, right? If you say, okay, states, well, that's pretty unambiguous. Everybody knows where the state lines are. But if it was states and then the Navajo reservation decided it was declared independence, it's like, uh-oh, that's opening a whole new can of worms, right? Well, if the Navajos can be independent, then maybe South Dakota is worried that the Sioux want to become independent, and, on and on. And who knows where that's going to stop. Or if a county, a particular county, Yuma County or whatever, decides they want to be independent, well, that opens up a new can of worms. So Kosovo, which on the one hand, it's kind of like the Alamo, maybe the Alamo squared for Serbia. The Serbs look at Kosovo. There was a big battle that they lost in Kosovo that's in the sometime like 1,000 years ago or whatever, maybe 1,200 years ago, that they look at as the birthplace of the Serbian nation. Well, that was in Kosovo. And so it has special meaning to them on the one hand. But on the other hand, during the course of the 20th century, you had a lot of migration of Albanians into Kosovo from, nearby Albania. Plus, the Albanians, being largely Muslim, have a high birth rate. And so a combination of immigration and high birth rates. And over the course of the 20th century, you went from having a significant Serbian majority to a significant Albanian majority. That's kind of setting things up. And so the Albanians in Kosovo, with the help of the CIA and whatnot, who are and the State Department, who are anti-Serbian, because the Serbians were, as Serbia was emerging, it was close to Russia, and of course the United States had bombed Serbia in the late 20th century. They were cooperating with these Albanians in setting up an independent Kosovo, and eventually they declared independence, and the United States recognized it, I think, around 2006. And this, Putin was saying, this is a horrible example. You know, if this is an example, then all these Republican borders that we inherited from the Soviet Union or Yugoslavia, they all become subject to reexamination, which is what's going on now. They are being subject to reexamination.
So, just so a follow, the United States in 2006 backed Albanian Muslims right after 9/11 against Serbian Christians.
Yeah, it did. Okay, it did. And you know, there's different ways of looking at this. You could be a Serbian nationalist and think, well, actually, I mean, not that there are any, but I'm just saying theoretically, you could be a Serbian nationalist and say, well, actually, if we get rid of Kosovo, if that just spins off into an independent Albanian statelet, then we get rid of a whole bunch of Albanians within our borders, and it's good riddance. The way a lot of say American, like, white nationalists might welcome losing, if not all of California, parts of California, or you know, parts of some other areas, because now you're getting rid of a lot of hard to digest people, right? I mean, that's conceivable. It's not really a thing, though. So the thing is also within Kosovo, there still are Serbians living there. They went from being a substantial majority to being a small minority, but they're still living there. And so what's going on now is an attempt basically to drive out the remaining Serbs in Kosovo. And so that's what fighting is about.
Okay.
And where's
the United States through NATO then is taking advantage of religious differences to basically attack Russia, because Serbia is loyal to Russia as well as the Serbians in Kosovo. Am I getting the point there?
Yeah, Serbs and Russians have had a long-standing kind of like a brotherhood. And you could look at World War I. This is what a lot of World War I was about. Serbia, it was before Yugoslavia was a country. Serbia was a country. And there are a lot of ethnic Serbs who lived in the Austro-Hungarian Empire, who lived in Bosnia, for instance. And Bosnia was being administered by, it had been taken over from the Ottoman Turks. It was under the control of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And the Grand Duke went down to Sarajevo, which is in Bosnia, and was assassinated by a Serbian nationalist, which led the Austro-Hungarian Empire to make these really outrageous demands on Serbia. And then the Russians said, wait a minute, the Serbs are our friends, right? They're these fellow Slavs. They speak a language. It's not nearly as close to Russian as Ukrainian, but it's a Slavic language. And they follow the Orthodox version of Christianity. And so there's this longstanding relationship. And that's how World War I got started. Hopefully World War III doesn't get started that way. But Serbia is, they are actually, there is this Russian version of NATO. So there used to be the Soviet version was the Warsaw Pact, and that got eliminated. That was broken up, disbanded a couple years before the Soviet Union broke up. So they broke up the Warsaw Pact in the late 80s. Now there is an organization. It's called the Collective Security Treaty Organization. So CSTO, and it's got six members: Russia, Belarus, Armenia, Kazakhstan, Tajikistan, and Kyrgyzstan, however you want to say it. These are all six former Soviet republics. So they're in a formal military alliance, but then there are two observer members. They're like a lower status. One is Afghanistan, the other is Serbia. So they do have this kind of semi-alliance, because they're only observers, but they're a semi-alliance with military alliance with Russia, and that's Serbia. And Serbia is surrounded by NATO countries. They've been bringing in all of these countries into NATO, including most recently Macedonia, which was the last other Yugoslav republic that was still they clung to the idea of Yugoslavia along with Serbia until well into the 20th century. And then they declared independence. It's very small, very poor, very backwards, but they got incorporated into NATO during the Trump administration, which I don't know why. You know, Trump was not very pro-NATO. What was the point of bringing in Montenegro? But they did. And then Kosovo is effectively a NATO protectorate. That's what it is.
Okay. So, I mean, England's take on this was that the U.S. is failing in Ukraine, so they're, you know, pivoting over to Kosovo. And putting NATO on the border, hoping that Russia will support Serbian peoples and attack NATO to give them a reason. Is that maybe a good take?
I don't know. I don't know exactly what they're thinking. So the thing is, if you're going to fight a proxy war with Russia, and you're fighting in Ukraine, which is Russia's borderlands. I mean, I think Ukraine, the word Ukraine just means frontier or borderland, whereas Serbia is, a few NATO countries away. It's like, you know, it's, there's no border between Russia and Serbia, and so if you're going to fight them, Serbia would be much closer to home turf for NATO. And so, you know, maybe there's something to that. And now, Englund, he did say that Serbs are basically Russians, yeah, which is kind of an exaggeration. They do have long historic ties. To say they're basically Russians, it's not really the same language. The Slavic languages are divided into Eastern, Western, and Southern Slavic languages, and the Serbian's a Southern language, so it's not that close to Russian, but
let's hit this on the other side of the break. We're on the break.
Okay.
Information you need to help you avoid income tax with these five easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your five easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our five easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
It's primary season again. I'm Peter Serafin with another Liberty Minute. Tuesday was primary day in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, my home state. That really got me thinking about the entire primary process. Primaries are how two main political parties, private organizations, decide who they'll put on the ballot for the actual election. The direct primary election is unique to the United States. The current system has only been around since the 1970s, and somehow it's become taxpayer funded. The 2016 primary elections cost taxpayers over $427 million. And to make that idea even worse, not everyone is allowed to participate in the taxpayer-funded selection process. 26 million registered voters can't vote in primaries because they're not registered to one of the two big parties and live in closed primary states. So what's the solution? Make the parties pay for their own primaries or go back to caucuses. The parties pay for the process every one of the caucus states. If you believe in limited government and you're fed up with the uniparty, visit constitutionparty.com and break out of the two-party illusion. Find more news and commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until next time, Sivis Pashem, Parabellum.
The secret to aging like fine wine is in the vines. Syrah grape seeds and skins contain high levels of flavonoids and resveratrol. Fermentation breaks these organic compounds down into smaller molecules, penetrating these therapeutic ingredients deeper into the skin, delivering faster and more effective results. Our handmade fermented skincare products are formulated with all natural ingredients and do not contain any phthalates or parabens. Similar products can cost as much as $180. At Natural Earth Medicine, we source our ingredients from local Arizona vineyards and cold process our oils to ensure that our customers receive the highest quality product in its purest form. Learn more at our website and try our fermented skincare products today. Visit naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
We're back to the Patrick and Jeremy Show on RBN May 30th, 23. Taking your calls live for your Tuesday night drive, 512-248-8252 if you want to weigh in on anything. Talking about Kosovo. So maybe they were saying that Kosovo might have been a distraction, but maybe they're using the Ukraine as a distraction for a chance to, you know, hem up this Kosovo situation and in preparation for some sort of all-out war with NATO and Russia, which is very scary. Maybe that's the direction that they're going. They're operating in Kosovo while Russia's distracted in Ukraine, supporting Albanian terrorists, using that as an excuse to bring NATO in.
Well, I mean, you have in Serbia a government, like I said, they've got observer status in the Russian version of NATO, this much smaller version of NATO, this collective security treaty organization. The current president, what's his name? He's pro-Russian. He says pro-Russian things. And there is an effort to color revolution him. The NATO and whatnot would certainly like to get rid of him. And, you know, there is a history of this. And in the wake of the wars in Yugoslavia, the Bosnian War and whatnot, the West was able to get the Serbian leader, Milosevic, ousted, and they brought him to The Hague and kept him in prison. And we're doing a trial, and then he died in prison mid-trial. And so this has happened. So you did have the Serbian leader at one point overthrown, and they'd like to do it again. And you think of people in Serbia, and they're surrounded by NATO countries. They're surrounded to an extent, partially surrounded by EU countries. Some of these, you know, places like Montenegro, they're in NATO, they're not in the EU, so they're not completely surrounded by EU countries. But you've got you know, Croatia, a very long border with Croatia, and Croatia gets all this tourism money. There's a big tourist industry. People are going from all over Europe to the beaches in Croatia. And I'm sure there are pro-Western people in Serbia. But in general, you know, the Serbs, they have this long relationship with Russia. And so they're an outpost of pro-Russianism and everything that represents, like family and heterosexuality and white people in the heart of Europe. Oh, shudder to think, you know, family and heterosexuality and white people in Europe, that doesn't belong there. So we'll see. I have historical background in this area. I don't have a lot of current knowledge. So that's about as much as I can say.
It just seems that the West has failed to regime change Putin over this Ukraine debacle. So maybe they're wanting to go all out NATO war and do it by force. In which case, if they could bring Kosovo into that fold, they would be even stronger. I guess Kosovo has recently applied for EU membership. I think in the last couple of years, I was trying to do some research on that. I want to say 22.
Yeah, Kosovo's not, I mean, they're not going to get EU membership anytime soon. Get into the EU, I mean, they have standards. They've lowered their standards a lot, but they have standards for, budgets and economic data and things like that, transparency, legal system. And there's no way Kosovo's going to come anywhere near meeting those standards. And then the other thing is the EU, whatever you want to say about the EU, and they have massive Muslim immigration into the EU, the EU has not wanted to include Muslim countries in the EU, right? So Turkey's been a candidate for EU membership for decades. They're never going to get it. Now, of course, Turkey is a very large country. Does it have 80 million people or something? And so I think they've got more people than any other EU country. And so to suddenly have the largest country in population terms in the EU be a Muslim country would change the nature of it. But you know, the Christians, Western civilization nature of the EU is being undermined through immigration rather than through membership. Like you also have Morocco. I mean, Morocco's in Africa. Morocco has sought membership in EU. It's not going to get it. Kosovo is so small it could be digested, but it's poor, it's backwards, it's Muslim, and so I don't think it's likely to get any EU membership. But it will continue as a NATO protectorate. And who knows? They'll try to overthrow this guy in Serbia, and maybe they'll be able to, and maybe they won't. I don't know.
Take calls on the other side of the break.
Handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names, Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Memory, your lifeline is burning holes. Recover the damage, bring it all home.
Back to the Patrick and Jeremy show on your Tuesday night broadcast. And we're taking calls. We've got Sherry and Joe in Florida, also Vinny in Indiana, all lined up. Let's go Sherry in Kansas first. Sherry, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jeremy. Hi, Patrick.
Hey.
What I remember about the deal during the Clinton administration, when all that was going on, that somebody said there's a lot of mining resources there in the Yugoslavia. They didn't delineate, you know, which I'm going to call them states, or you know, when they broke up and stuff. So Patrick, do you know right now, this place where the U.S. is occupying in Syria, that's a real money-making area for them, and they're keeping them from getting their oil wealth and their grain wealth. Do you know the different states, what resources they had ended up with?
Well, Kosovo, I mean, it's got coal and it's got a mining sector. It's a very small area, and honestly, I don't know how. I've heard people emphasize the mining, the various minerals, and you've got obviously coal, and then you've got metals like nickel and copper and iron and things like that. These are things that you can access other places. So even if Kosovo has rich mining, it doesn't have a mining industry that's ever been developed enough to make Kosovo rich. I mean, Kosovo was the poorest part of Yugoslavia. So, you know, for instance, West Virginia has a lot of coal and, you know, other minerals. But would people fight over West Virginia So
well,
yeah,
if they're rare earth stuff, they would. You know, these rare earth minerals.
I don't know about the rare earth. Yeah.
Yeah. That seems to be the big deal in mining nowadays.
Let me break in on that point. That's an interesting point both of you raised. West Virginia and West Kentucky, big coal mining areas. And at one time, they were very wealthy areas when the government would allow them to mine and have workers, because it was dangerous work. But they're not rich now because the government shut down that production pretty much. So maybe is that the case maybe in these areas of Yugoslavia? I'm pulling up from encyclopedia.com. There's a lot of oil, gas, coal, copper, lead, zinc, nickel, gold, pyrite, chrome in that area. But if they're not allowed to mine it, and as Patrick pointed out, if they're not allowed to have industrial mining, then they're not going to be rich.
Well, there was a movie made about the way they were flat-top mining in West Virginia and polluting people's water supplies, and that's one reason they got shut down. And that's the problem with mining, is that they want to do it the easiest way they can, and a lot of times the easiest way is also the dirtiest way, and people can't live there, you know, if they can't have clean water and stuff, and it ends up polluting that. But I remember, I think it, John Moore said something about, now you were in the Air Force, weren't you, Jeremy?
Yeah, for about 2 decades.
Okay, were you in during that Yugoslavian conflict crap?
I just came in the Bosnian conflict.
Okay, didn't have to go over there?
No, a lot of my friends did. I ended up staying stateside.
Well, lucky you. My son went in 1992, and he ended up doing, after AIT, he went over to Europe for 2 years, stayed out of Vicenza, Italy. But he went down to the deal going on in Rwanda. He didn't have to go in Rwanda, but they were in some country next to it, and they were there just to pull out the UN guys or the Americans or something if they got in trouble. I think it was all UN guys, but anyway. But now John Moore said that there is a pyramid, and I think he said it is in Bosnia. It's one of those Yugoslavian areas over there that you can't, and of course it's all covered with dirt. But he says it's a huge pyramid, and you can see it if you're flying over it. And usually with those pyramids, there's technology that they're trying to get at.
I don't know about that. I was just bringing up the point that, you know, in the same way that a lot of areas in mid-20th century America, you know, like the steel mills in Pennsylvania and coal mining in Kentucky and Virginia's, those were wealthy and people were making good livings at one point, but the government shut that down. In that same way, I mean, there could be a potential to gain a lot of wealth in Yugoslavia for mining these things, but it's never been done, I guess. Is that accurate or true?
If you were a coal miner doing it the old way before they got more mechanized, you were not making a good living because the only thing you could afford to do is buy at the company store. So they may have been making a good living at the top, but they were screwing, just like they, you know, the railroad screwed the farmers, the big companies screwed the coal miners too. So, but
well, yeah, I may stand corrected on that point. I mean, the steel mills, definitely the people were making great livings. Like, say, example, like Bethlehem. The people that were working there in the mid-20th century were very well off.
Yeah.
But then all that was outsourced.
Anyway,
do you have it?
Thanks,
Sherry. Do you have a take on that, Patrick?
Well, okay. Yeah, so I mean as memorialized in the Billy Joel song, the people in Bethlehem, or I guess Allentown, Eastern Pennsylvania, who were working in the steel mills, they had enough money to take weekends at the Jersey Shore, right? And I spent weeks at the Jersey Shore, and so yeah, there's some truth to that. People were making livings. The Pittsburgh and Allentown and Bethlehem and these places, the steel workers were, if not middle class, they were affluent enough, working class, to afford their own houses and whatnot. There was a lot of environmental problems. People who were white collar workers in Pittsburgh in the middle 20th century would bring a shirt with them to work so they could change at lunchtime, because there was so much soot in the air that their white shirts would get all speckled. But of course, the steel industry got shut down, not so much by environmental regulation, but it got shut down by Japanese competition in the 60s. Anyway, we're taking callers. I don't want to take too much time from the callers.
Great points, though. Let's go to, we have Joe in Florida next. Joe, welcome. Friend.
Hey, Jeremy. Hey, Patrick. Good to hear you guys. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I like the fact that you're talking about the Serbia thing, and the way what I thought was, so this is kind of like the way they set it up, you know, in the 90s and the conflicts and what we saw. They left it, and I'm talking about NATO and the U.S., the sort of Jewish-controlled forces. They left it in a place where at any moment when they might need to reignite that conflict, they'd be able to do that. And so how convenient, right, that they're now engaging this war in Russia, that they're reigniting this conflict between the Serbs and the Kosovans up there, you know, Albanians, and it's like a tinderbox anyway. And I think that's not a minor part of their big plan, the Jewish war against Russia, that now they want to have a conflict there as another way of sort of distracting or causing pressure on Russia. What do you think?
Well, there's this term frozen conflict, and you hear it from time to time. You've been hearing it recently, and frozen conflicts are conflicts that don't get resolved. They simmer down, but they don't get resolved. And so there was never a resolution, for instance, to the Korean War. There's never been a peace treaty. Trump was on the verge of getting it done, and then John Bolton and Mike Pompeo and the American media and establishment just pulled the rug out from under him. And, you know, the thing is, when he set up those meetings with Kim Jong-un, the leader of North Korea, he didn't even go through the State Department to do it. It was the South Korean National Security Advisor who set everything up. He couldn't even go. He couldn't even use his own government because he wasn't in control of his own government. But you have these frozen conflicts, areas where there's a kind of temporary resolution that's not really accepted on all sides. And the Donbass was basically a frozen conflict for 8 years. Although it wasn't completely frozen because the Ukrainians were shelling it for 8 years. And then there are these other areas as in the wake of the Cold War. So Kosovo, this is kind of a frozen conflict. And the Transdniestria in Moldova and South Ossetia and Abkhazia and Georgia. And you had all these areas. And so and the thing about the frozen conflict, I guess it's like a TV dinner. You can take it out of the freezer and warm it up whenever you're hungry.
Yeah, and, I'm sorry.
No, and there's talk that let's end the Ukraine war with a frozen conflict without a real resolution, and then it can be taken out and heated up whenever you want it.
Yeah, Absolutely. The other thing I wanted to mention was, and, you know, actually, I am very, very concerned that we are extremely, extremely close to World War III right now. And the two incidents, and I called earlier today, that are actually getting me enraged is that the one is the Lindsey Graham comments, okay, and the other one is the Jerry Nadler comments. Now, the Lindsey Graham comments, okay, there was an edited moment in the video, so maybe Lindsey Graham didn't immediately say, you know, our money is, you know, it's well worth the money we spent for killing Russians. Maybe he didn't immediately say it. Maybe he said it like 5 seconds later. But even the idea that this senator, this Zionist puppet stooge, is grinning from ear to ear, talking about happy that our money is buying, you know, dead Russians. And the other thing, which is enraging, is, again, another example of the Jews literally walking us into World War III, the comment by Jerry Nadler, Congressman Jerry Nadler, formerly 500-pound Jerry Nadler, and an independent reporter, and they covered on RT, well, are you in favor? Do you think it's okay that we have the money, our missiles that we've paid for, are literally landing on Russian territory? And he says, oh, I'm fine with that. Well, that's fair. That's fair. So lo and behold, yesterday and today, there are missiles that are hitting Moscow apartment buildings. I mean, this is such an outrage. Imagine what would be happening now if we knew, if it was reported and it happened, that missiles from, I don't know, some partner of Russia, you know, were bombing apartment buildings in Washington. Would we be settling for that? So, you know, the depraved nature of these reckless Jews who run our country and our foreign policy is out of control. We have to do something to stop these people. They're literally steps away from World War III. I'm really worked up about it. You know, I think we need to pray seriously.
Yeah, and these are all good points. So, I mean, on the one hand, you could say, well, Ukraine and Russia are at war, and the Russian army is deep within Ukraine, and so for Ukraine to strike at Russia, all is fair in love and war. You could say that. But on the other hand, if we are supplying those weapons and it's a proxy war, well, that means that we are at war with Russia. If we're supplying, I mean, and your,
exactly,
your analogy is a correct one. And of course, it's, you don't just have to have a hypothetical analogy. Think of how many times that Iran has been called the state supporter of terrorism because some group in the Middle East attacks American troops in the Middle East. So you got American troops in Syria, and they get attacked by some group, and then you've got Lindsey Graham saying this is Iran. Iran is the leading state supporter of terrorism in the world, and right, we hear all that, and I that's the first time I've ever done a Lindsey Graham impression, and
yeah,
I'm really kind
good.
Of disgusted. I'm disgusted that it sounded so well. I don't want to be.
Well, you don't want to be an expert in that.
No, I don't want to be an
Lindsey
expert.
Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham is happy that American money buys dead Russians, and Lindsey Graham is happy that his money buys teenage boys. Am I right?
Well, I was going to say, you know, the thing about it, you've got the Jews, right? But then Lindsey Graham, I don't know. I could imagine that there are films or videos of him that will keep him spouting the Zionist garbage for, like, as long as he lives. You know what I mean? Talk about Epstein blackmail suspect. Lindsey Graham is probably number one, right?
Yeah.
Not that I'm not, well, allegedly, right?
Here's the thing. The value of all of that, whatever compromise they've got against Lindsey Graham, keeps falling every time they're pushing all this LGBT stuff and normalizing pedophilia and everything. You are devaluing Lindsey Graham's compromise, because at some point it's just going to be, well, So what? He was a cannibal and ate children after he had sex with them. So what? There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. So, and by the way, just one last thing that I'll say. I heard you today. You were talking about, you know, and so here's a good thing. If somebody accuses me, right, of being anti-Semite, which I'm not, I don't hate Jews, right? But if somebody accused me of being anti-Semite, I'm going to say, no, I'm not anti-Semite. Patrick, you'll like this. I'm an anti-Schemite because I'm against the Jews scheming against the Goyim. An anti-Schemite.
Anti-Schemite. So, you know, Farrakhan had anti-Termite, which was all right. But anti-Schemite, yeah. Against the schemes. Stop scheming. That's all. Just stop scheming.
That's all we ask. Oh, and by the way, one really last thing is, on your show today, Patrick, you were talking about the great, you know, some of the commentators that you listen to that are good, that will actually even, they won't name the Jews, but they're actually getting close to it. And you didn't mention Dr. E. Michael Jones, who is never afraid to actually name the Jew. And he gives an amazing, good analysis of what's really going on, I think. So just add him to your list. You know, he's on Cozy TV on Fridays at like 5 p.m. Eastern. He does a show on the same network that Nick Fuentes does is on.
Yeah, that's and Nick's network. Nick created that network.
Yeah, and what do you call, and by the way, his book, Dr. Jones's book on the Holocaust narrative, which I think it's going to be a game changer, I think it's a couple of months away. It's like maybe sometime later in the summer or early fall, which I think is going to be, he examines basically the Holocaust narrative, which he says, his analysis is, the Holocaust myth, the Holocaust narrative is the founding myth of the American Empire. The Holocaust narrative is the founding myth of the American Empire. So now we see the American Empire is collapsing, so it's inevitable that the Holocaust narrative, or some people might call it the hoaxacost, is going to be exposed.
Okay.
Right, thanks, Joe. We got one more caller. We're going to try to
thanks
get
a lot,
to
guys.
I think Julie skipped a break, and we got Vinny in Indiana. Vinny, welcome.
Hey, Patrick. Hey, Jeremy. Hey, as far, I listened to Boomer Vision today, and you're talking about Douglas McGregor. Douglas McGregor made a comment that if anything goes on between Serbia and Kosovo, it's kind of a desperate move to create some type of relevancy for NATO, because NATO has been a disaster for the European countries. You know, ostensibly was you know, there to serve, and you were... He's mentioned several chess moves that he kind of sees the Russians doing now. The last time Patrick was on, he mentioned that Egypt and Iran are talking to each other. Well, you know, Egypt, you know, the United States tried to do this kind of revolution in the Sudan, which is failing. And, you know, Iran is now forcing the U.S. not to have submarines in the Persian Gulf. And if they hooked up with Egypt... Iran has all these anti-ship, long-range, high-speed anti-ship missiles. Well, Egypt could say, we don't want you in the Red Sea. And we also, if we were able to buy those missiles from you, from Iran, well, you know, our presence in the far eastern Mediterranean, right next to Israel, well, they got a counter. They're not totally dependent on the U.S. Navy. And what has the U.S. Navy and NATO done for Europe? Because they started that war in Libya, and that civil war, which is insane, is causing Europe now to be flooded with African migrants. And the U.S. doesn't stop doing anything to stop the Jewish these NGOs from picking up the Africans right at the coast of, you know, of Libya and bringing them into Europe. So France and Italy are being wrecked. I mean, what has NATO done for Europe? So I mean, McGregor said, "Well, what if they redeploy some of these Wagner group to as peacekeepers in Libya? They're already doing peacekeeping missions in other African countries." I mean, he thinks out a lot of different moves that could go down the line. It's very interesting.
Yeah. So there's a lot of problems in the world, but a lot of problems that never get solved. And the reason they never get solved is because really solutions are never offered to them, that there is an interest.
It also serves Jewish interests.
Yeah, they're keeping things stirred up. And all of a sudden, you've got the rise of China. And, you know, you don't have to be so over the top pro-Chinese like Cato and I would get. But the fact is, you get the Chinese coming in, and in some cases, it's the Russians coming in, and into areas where American power is waning, and they... Peace is breaking out. An agreement between Saudi Arabia and Iran. You've got Russia, which I guess is negotiating a deal between Syria and Turkey, and now, you know, Iran and Egypt. And this is all around the Middle East, and the Middle East was kept in a state of constant disarray and conflict because it served Israeli interests, and Israeli interests rule in Washington. So what's this going to do for Israel? My answer is, who cares? I mean, who cares what it does for Israel, to Israel? It's not my concern.
Well, I think Israel's freaking out. There's an article at the End Review that these troubles in Israel, these protests, are that the Netanyahu faction isn't really sold on the Ukrainian war. They're getting really worried about Iran, which is, ever since Soleimani was killed, and Ron Unz says that this COVID was an attack on, was also a biological attack on Iran. Iran is just going massive guns, building weapons. They are building huge numbers of tanks. They licensed the production facilities from Russia, and McGregor says we're going to be told that we got to leave Iraq. Well, the forces we have left in Syria and Iraq, we're going to be told to leave, and we really won't have an option because, you know, we put so much into Ukraine.
All right, thanks a lot, Vinny. That's the end of the show. Tune in to Patrick Jeremy Part 2. We will do further analysis, cover even more interesting topics. You guys stay classy.
Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.